Dame Kiri Takanawa has dominated international opera stages, concert, and recital halls for more than 40 years. In her trailblazing career, the New Zealand native has applied her bright lyric soprano to operas of Mozart and Strauss, as well as Verdi, Handel, and Puccini. In New York, she became a fixture at the Met with her debut in 1974. But perhaps her most famous appearance was at the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer in 1981. The following year, she was made a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire. This month comes another honor. She's one of five recipients at the Opera News Awards. It brings Dame Kiri Takanawa to the WQXR studios. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, April 17th is a big day. You're receiving an Opera News Award alongside tenor Jonas Kaufmann, conductor Ricardo Muti, soprano Patricia Rossett, and bass baritone Bryn Terval. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think any honor that's given to you is accepted graciously and certainly much loved, because for people to give it to you is a big thing anyway. That they would even select me is rather nice. So I always think that I'll take them. I'll take as many as they want. Medals, too. As many medals, as many things.
And you're going to be in great company.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, really fun. Well, Opera News is the house publication of the Metropolitan Opera Guild. But for over a dozen years, you actually didn't perform at the Met from 1998 to 2010, February of 2010. And then you took on the part of the Duchess in Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment. Why the long Met hiatus and why the big return last year?
I think maybe they didn't ask me. No, that's not true. I'd sort of had enough of opera for a while. I needed a break. And then when I was asked to do Duchess von Krakenthorpe, I thought that was quite fun. And it was something that I wasn't about to go and do a big role. And I thought, well, there's nothing nicer than doing something that's sort of cameo. And it was such a fun thing. And when I did do it, I just loved every minute of it. And I'm very pleased to be actually doing it again. So that's even more exciting.
At the Met?
Yes.
Oh, how did it feel to be back on the stage?
Well, gosh, you know, you sort of think, well, you should never really come back. And I didn't really want to, simply because I sort of thought I'd done enough. But it was lovely. And the people, you know, quite a lot of the people are the same as when I was there for those many years. And it's just a huge family back there. They're very, very nice and very welcoming. And just fun.
So most recently here in New York, you sang with the NHK Symphony as part of Carnegie Hall's Japan NYC Festival. Did that have a particular resonance for you in light of the February earthquake in New Zealand?
Well, as much as ours is still ongoing as theirs is still ongoing, it's a disaster in my country, a really big disaster, as with Japan. And they were very, very brave. As you can imagine, as you've seen, they don't show their emotions very well or at all. And they were very, very sort of stalwart during the whole thing. I would say I apologized, you know, that it was such a terrible thing. But we made announcements, and their economy won't even suffer as much as our economy. Our economy will suffer really quite considerably, because down in the South Island we had tourism, we had computer software being built down there, the port is closed, the students, we had 18,000 students, and there's no schools for them to go to anymore, the whole city is shut down. It's really a huge disaster, and our Prime Minister's, you know, overloaded with the problems of trying to find enough money to finance. But everyone has been very, very good, but I'm still sort of going back to my country and saying, right, come on everybody, we need to help our country. But with the Japanese, we didn't get the tsunami, you know, and that was a real terrible thing, that tsunami for them. I can't imagine what it must be like, and losing people, now people are just missing. We at least got all the people out. There were quite a number dead, but at least all the bodies came out. And that was, and of course the response from all over the world, from America, Japan, Australia, people just came to rescue as soon as the call was made out. And then the Japanese were just almost the first to arrive for us. And then, of course, 10 days later, it hit them. So, you know, it just, it's nothing worse.
Really amazing.
Thank you very much for letting me just talk about it, because it's so much there in our everyday life, and I feel so desperate for it. You know, it's the South Island. It's not my island, but it's we're as one. We're mm-hmm. one nation people.
Really interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go on to your a little sort of a broad strokes look at your career. I'm quoting Wikipedia here when I say that in your teens and early 20s, you were a pop star. That's how they qualify it. And popular entertainer at clubs in New Zealand. Curious to know how you made the transition. At that time, you were singing in sort of the mezzo-soprano range. How did you sort of discover that you should go on to be an opera singer, and how did you transition into the world of the soprano?
Well, I was really a popular entertainer, really. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really a pop singer. I suppose it's easier to say pop singer, but I would sing all... I would go to these clubs, you know, these dine and dance clubs, which were way, way back then, and they'd all have their vodka, and because they couldn't bring... there wasn't really a restaurant, they had no license, so they'd all bring their booze to the table, and I was singing Ave Maria to these unbelievably drunken people, and I think they maybe thought they'd gone to heaven and the angel had come down.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Can you imagine? Ave Maria, and they were absolutely bazonked, sloshed, and I did it every Saturday night in the same restaurant or whatever it was called. Different people, poor things, they fell out of there thinking, who is this? But I was earning money. I was earning money to go study. I didn't see very much opera in New Zealand. We didn't have any television until I was 14. And I mean, of course, over here in America, it's just so wonderful to see so many performances of so many different things. It's just oozing out the walls here. It's so exciting. And I think I maybe saw two operas in my life before I left New Zealand. So mm-hmm. I had no idea. And I had really only sung one operatic aria by the time I left. So I didn't know that I was actually going to be an opera singer.
I'm Midge Woolsey, and today my guest on WQXR is Dame Kiri Takanawa. You have portrayed a wide spectrum of characters across your career, princesses, noble countesses, the doomed, the betrayed. Which would you say has resonated the most for you? Which role?
The answer to that is always every role, because I've loved and worked hard at every single role. But I find it very hard to even select one. But I suppose the Straussian roles I've loved, and the Mozart roles. I mean, how can I not say that the Mozart roles were also my favorites? The Strauss roles were just glorious music. I sort of can't choose. Mm-hmm. So someone has to choose it for me. Maybe you will.
Did I hear you in a broadcast one time say that when you warm up, sort of the determining aria for you is Ach ich Fuss? Did I hear you say that?
Yes, yes.
Do you still do that today?
Yes, I do.
Because why is that?
Well, it puts your voice right where it should be. And normally, when we're selecting young singers, you can normally select them within about five notes. Mm-hmm. Because if they can't get the first one, they're not going to go through.
Thank you. I think everybody listening right now would agree with me that throughout your entire career, you have absolutely met the physical requirements that are so important to Peter Gelb at the Met today. How do you feel about his, I'm going to call it his quest to make opera a more visually appealing art form?
Oh, well, I think it should be visually appealing. I think he's right. The only thing is what worries me is the voices getting smaller. Just because the bodies are smaller. And I think there's a certain fighting weight to every voice. You'll find them in the Wagnerian roles. They don't get small, and mm-hmm. thank goodness, in the Wagnerian roles. But, you know, I don't want to see is a young singer being sung out after 5 years. That would be a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Just simply because the bodies have got to be, you know, more attractive. But there are some beautiful young ladies out there singing beautifully with the right type of voice and the right, everything's right. But I hope that they all look after themselves.
Do you see that happening in certain circumstances, seeing the voice get sung out early?
Yes, I do, but not necessarily just here. I see voices sung out anyway because the young people are taking on things that they really shouldn't. They're advised incorrectly, or they just take it on themselves to sing something that's incorrect, and you know, it doesn't take very long for the voice to blow up.
Oh, the guidance they get is so important,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Your opera appearances became more infrequent after the end of your marriage. You've talked about that in several things that I read after your marriage of more than 30 years in 1997. Looking back, do you think that the decision was based strictly on emotional issues, or were there physical issues that were playing into that as well?
I think with anybody who's going through a divorce, and everyone's going through one every minute of the day, as far as I can make out.
Right, you are.
I think that you tend to be running after for the first year. You're running away from something, and basically you're taking it with you everywhere you go. So I found that the opera brought back too many memories of some of the things that were hurtful during the times. And I feel that even now looking back, I don't think I would have gone back and sung any opera at that time because there's just so much hurt.
Interesting.
During the times, every note I sang, every role I learned, there was you knew the other side of the story inside those notes.
Do you feel that focusing on recitals and concerts as you are now has been good for the physical evolution of your voice?
Yes. Well, also, you know, I love to sing, and opera was wonderful, and there's a time to leave it. It's certainly for the young. Singing the concerts and the way I am doing it also keeps my voice in good shape. It's a nice way of performing. But also I have a foundation, so I have to sort of prove that I can still sing to this age and show the young people that, you know, you can last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little bit of inside proving to myself that while I'm still singing and teaching young people these days, you know, you can still sing. Because I say to them at some of the singing lessons I give them, you know, if I can do it, you can do it. At this stage, at my age of 67, they should be able to do it at 35.
So talk a little bit more about this foundation. How did it come about?
Well, when I left New Zealand, I was given a certain amount of money. I sang for it, and I was given a certain scholarship, but that's all there was. And when I got to England, the fees weren't like they are today. And I've seen, as I always thought, that I would try and get money together to help young students. But as it happens now, it's costing around £30,000 a year for any one student to come over from England because they're not given an English scholarship or any scholarship. So it's tough expense for them. So I thought, well, I'll save up some money, and I have, and I'm trying to help some students. We're opening it up to other countries as well, but it's being selected fairly carefully by musicians and people that I really, really trust. But it's not like an open field. We just select very carefully who we will help. Mainly, we'd like it to be mainly New Zealanders.
And what do you look for in a young singer in terms of potential?
Well, it's hard to find that. You know, I look for the fire in their eyes, I look for the dedication, the stickability, the musicianship, even if they haven't learned it so well, that they are totally prepared to work and work extremely hard and very fast. Because unfortunately, the window of opportunity for a young girl is very short. By the time she's 28, 29, unless she's really on the road, she's not going to make it. Age 30, they're normally... people don't want them unless they're a Wagnerian singer. So that's the sad thing about female voice. The male voice can last a little longer. Tenor voice has got to be very careful. You don't overwork them. And they can come up to a certain age, and then you've got to sort of start helping them a little bit further on after 25. And then they can start getting into roles that are, you know, not too heavy for them. So it's just a real balancing act for all the different ages.
So is there anyone in the current crop of young singers that really stands out for you?
Certainly at the Met right now, the Lindemann program, there are one or two there that are extraordinary, really extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope they come through. It's sort of a bit of the waiting game, as long as they're singing the right things. And they're nurtured. They need to be nurtured.
Mm-hmm. They do really fine work.
They do.
At the Met,
yes.
I have to say. So if a young singer just came to you and had 5 minutes to spend with Dame Kiri Takanawa, and this person really wanted to be a singer, what advice would you give this person?
Oh, that's a big question, and it wouldn't take 5 minutes. It would take... how very kind you are, but...
It's a very 2011 question.
Yes, I like it. This is the fast one, but there isn't a five-minute quick fix, quick answer. They've got to start at age about 15 or 16. They go through the schools, a good singing teacher. Their voice is fairly even. They're, you know, a really good body weight, or certainly, you know, they haven't overdone with their body, like gotten too fat. You sort of look at the structure of them, too. If they're small, they're going to have small voice. If they're slightly bigger, they're going to have a bigger... My sort of size is not a bad size.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to judge it. You'd have to put 12 there, and I say, well, I think that one's going to make it, but you're never sure. But with some of the young people, there is one particular girl today was extraordinary and just the most glorious voice, and I think she's really, really going to be on her way,
mm-hmm.
which is so lovely. I mean, the choices that they make there at the Lindemann are really amazing. It's gone from amazing to really amazing. And Brian Ziegler, who runs it, as I say, the choices are fabulous.
The amazing Brian Ziegler running the amazing Lindemann program.
Exactly.
Well, let's go on to the royal wedding. Just a couple of weeks after you win the Opera News Award, another royal wedding is going to take place. Curious to know what you remember most about being a soloist at the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana in St. Paul's Cathedral. We all remember it. Tell us how you remember it.
Well, I remember it because I had to keep it such a long secret. I wasn't allowed to say anything to anybody. And I think I told one person, because you always have to tell your husband. Otherwise, there's always something going on. He doesn't believe that, you know, you can keep the secret. But that was about all. But we used to have a code word for when I'd make a mistake or say something that was stupid and you know, the secret would pop out. But it was the long secret, and then finding the dress, and I was working in Paris at the time, found the dress, which they said was a bird of paradise. And then from that point on, I just, Prince Charles said that he wanted me to sing Let the Bright Seraphim. I rehearsed it a lot, and then I was at Covent Garden doing a lot of work, which I really regretted doing, because I thought, how am I going to sing this 2 or 3 days later, this aria? Anyway, I got through it. But it was an extraordinary day. I mean, it was the hype was amazing, because no one really knew Diana, Princess of Wales. And
I'm getting nervous all over again thinking about it. I was so nervous.
Yeah, well,
for
she
you
was
that day.
Such a beautiful young girl, wasn't she? And so young. And you know, he was the sort of prince and knight in shining armor, and it was so grand, all from St. Paul's. And here I was going through the back door, and the most important thing they said, there are no toilets. Remember, there are no toilets.
That is key. I know that's key.
That was
key.
The first thing. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And here I'm carrying my little thermos thinking, hang on, how do I work this out?
That is so funny.
So I'm drinking during the ceremony as well.
Do you have any sense of why he picked Let the Bright Seraphim?
He knows his music, and, of course, Handel, mm-hmm. of course. So I think he went straight to Handel. which is normal. And of course, it was an aria that I had known for a long time, so that was easy on me. And then it was just get up and sing it, and we did.
I'm Midge Woolsey, and today my guest on WQXR is Dame Kiri Takanawa. Do you think opportunities like this one, the one that you had, are important for classical music in general, for its visibility?
Well, luckily enough, I suppose it was, it is, it has been, yes. But I never thought that I would be the one there. I blocked off the day to watch it, and suddenly I'm in it. And mm-hmm. I mean, how extraordinary is that?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, now what am I going to do? I can't watch it anymore. So my father happened to be over visiting from New Zealand, and he's all very proud of me. And it was very funny because my children were at a little school in England at the time, and these ladies said, well, you know, Kiri, we're all going to go and walk the Royal Walk. Would you be interested at all? And so I said, well, that'd be lovely, knowing what I knew. And then later they said, well, you won't be needing to go on the Royal Walk, will you? Because they were going to walk where they were all going. And I went, oh. So I felt a little bit, I don't know how you feel like that when they say, well, you won't be needing to go on the Royal Walk.
That's cute. Well, I hope you got some good pictures.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, before we part company today, I want to talk a little bit about the fact that you've been an outspoken critic of what we call today's quote-unquote crossover artists. And I think this is such a frustrating problem. And it has not only to do with the artists, but also the people who handle them and the listening public. I'd love to know why it's important to you to speak out about this kind of performing.
Well, from our point of view, if you listen to the opera singers, we work so hard. It takes years and years and years. And some of these people come through and their hopes are dashed because quite often they disappear within a very short time. We don't. And the thing is, we work so hard and so hard. And someone will just get up out of the blue and sing a song or an aria. And they think, you know, this is it, this is it. And I think, well, didn't you ever hear Luciano Pavarotti sing Nessun Dorma ever? Ever? I mean, that was the most...
Nothing to compare it to.
Nothing to compare it to. Like, you know, Joan Sutherland, there's not another voice in the world like that. I listened to Debaldi all the time when I was growing up. Not another voice around like that. These voices have all gone. And I want to make sure that our part of the classical world survives. And it's not a whiz-bang. And, I've been sort of slammed across the head for calling things whiz-bang. But I don't want the fast buck. It's because I'm so proud of what I've done,
mm-hmm.
and it's taken 40 years and a wonderful career for 40 years and not 5 minutes. So I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, if they don't have a sense of what it really takes to be an opera singer, read Renee Fleming's book, The Inner Voice.
Yeah.
And you see that it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
The languages, the training, it's really... I can see how frustrating it would be to see someone get up and try to sing an aria. So the question is there a proper role for this kind of music?
Certainly, yes, I think there is, but don't call them classical. Don't intrude into our area that's really specialized, and it does take a lot. But yes, there is, because everyone's got to have a chance. And there are some good singers out there, but, you know, the Rolling Stones still roll on, the Beatles still roll on, and they've been going for years and years and years, where a lot of the other ones have disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not talking just about those two. There are many other great groups. I like Chicago, mm-hmm. for instance. I just love that
That's
band.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a great band, really.
How about the Grateful Dead?
Oh, they're good. I like the Grateful Dead, yes.
Who do what they do well,
yes,
right?
Yes, and for a long time. Mm-hmm. I went to one of their concerts. Didn't realize it was so loud, though.
Put the little Kleenex in your ear,
yes.
Or a tissue.
Mm-hmm.
One last question before I let you go. There are a lot of concerns about the audience for opera today, aging, dying audience. Where do you see the future of this art form? For instance, are HD broadcasts going to help?
I'm hoping so. I know that in New Zealand it's the only way some people can see the opera. And there are a lot of young people, all the young students are going. But I just think that eventually the audience will regrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they will, because people do love opera.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. But from New Zealand's point of view, there are 15 theatres or something that everyone, they get up at a certain time to watch it. So I think it's growing, I hope.
And what about this simple medium, the radio? We here at WQXR, believe it or not, this is the only classical music radio station in New York.
Well, that's sad, but I listen to it a lot.
That's good to know.
Yes, I do. I listen to. In fact, I listen to radio. I don't watch television very much, except for one or two programs that are my favies. But the radio is my favorite.
Well, that's
good to know. I listen
to
the radio all the time. It's nonstop.
We hope you'll come back then.
Thank you. Keep going.
It's been so great having you here. Dame Kiri Takanawa, thank you for joining us today on WQXR. Dame Kiri Takanawa will be receiving an Opera News Award at the Plaza Hotel on April 17th.